The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Hey, we're back. Hour number two of the show. Great to have you with us on what has already been a very busy day, and it's a long way from being over. Kurt Bowles joined us a couple weeks ago in Atlanta. We had a fantastic conversation with the veteran would not be an accurate word to describe. I think Kirk told us he has been at the paper in Austin for, I think, 47 years, if I remember correctly. Kirk, great to say hello to you again. Did I get that right, 47 years?
49, but you're 49. Close enough.
I mean, the fact that you can remember is even more remarkable.
That is remarkable. You're right.
Well, Kirk, first of all, it's great to see you again. We ask this question really for the last year and a month. We ask it every time we talk to you or anyone from your part of the country. But I think we're all curious if anything that's happened this week with the Big Ten and all the networks may open the door for the Longhorns to come over to the SEC earlier than scheduled. What are you hearing?
Well, as a matter of fact, Paul, I talked to both Joe Castiglione and Chris Del Conte today, and basically, they're basically saying, no, it doesn't have a direct impact on what they're going to do and when they might, you know, leave for the SEC. Chris Del Conte, the Texas AD, said, no, it has no bearing at all on what we do. But it seems like everything affects everything, Paul. I can't imagine it not having some kind of domino effect, because it's just going to trigger the next wave of media rights negotiations for the Big 12 in the Pac-12, and it'd be hard to believe that wouldn't affect Texas and Oklahoma.
And that's really what, you know, we're trying to do deductive logic. Now, I realize that those are two outstanding athletic directors, and they can't say anything because they know hounds right. like you are going to blow it up and put it on the front page of the paper if they indicate, oh, yeah, why not start next year or the year after? But If now the door has opened for ESPN to start negotiating with the Big 12, doesn't it make sense for, in part of the negotiations, considering the hand that ESPN has, it's not like the Big 12 is that big of a commodity without Oklahoma and Texas, for them to move some money here and say we'll do this versus that and let your guys come over here sooner?
Well, it sure makes sense if you connect all the dots. They've got money left over now that they're not involved with the Big Ten negotiations, so you would assume they would want to get it done sooner than later. You know, it seems like for a few weeks, ever since USC and UCLA, you know, agreed to join the Big Ten, but we've been all waiting on Notre Dame, and we all know they've got an open invitation to join, I guess, whichever conference they want. But yeah, I do think it could precipitate it, because, you know, there are a lot of moving parts. You know, Big 12 has four new schools coming in next summer, but Texas and Oklahoma are committed to three more years in the Big 12. And when you get down to it, nobody wants that. It's an awkward divorce. And, you know, all parties would be better served if you moved on and got things done and got to your new home. So hopefully with the four new schools coming to the Big 12, maybe, you know, the ESPN package is done. Because they have money left over, maybe it precipitated, and maybe we'd see Texas and OU in the SEC in a couple of years.
Well, it just seems like, and I don't know the new commissioner of the Big 12, but he's got to be easier to deal with than Bob Bowlesby, who just, you know, took it personally that Oklahoma and Texas would want to leave for the SEC. I've never quite understood his level of anger.
Yeah, he's still ticked off, I think. He's been hot under the collar for more than a year. I think the word is betrayal, Paul.
Okay.
You know, he served on that playoff committee with Greg Sankey, and I think he felt like he was misled. But I'm sure George Kliakoff can identify.
Yeah, they all can.
He went down that same path just this summer. So, and, you know, Bob didn't have the most pleasant and kind things to say about the worldwide leader either. So, I would assume with Brett Yormark, the new Big 12 commissioner, it's going to be more bygones because, in a way, they need each other. You know, ESPN is going to need more inventory than just the SEC and the ACC. Obviously, the Big 12 needs a home. And now that CBS and NBC may be off the market for the Big 12, you know, they're looking at, you know, ESPN, Fox, you know, maybe some of the streaming services like the Big Ten's probably going to do.
And again, we always have these are always awkward conversations when you're sitting here and you know that there's somebody at ESPN headquarters that just flips a switch and nobody ever hears my voice again. But I mean, the Big 12, whatever their options are, it doesn't seem like there's much room left at other places. It's hard to imagine that ESPN isn't a pretty good landing spot. So, okay, I'm answering my own question. Let's talk about the Longhorns for a second, because there has been a buzz around this program since Arch Manning, in theory, has led a group of players to Austin. Alabama sees them week two. What are you sensing from the early days of camp? Other than the fact that we all know you voted the Longhorns number one in the poll, even though you don't vote in the coaches' poll. How did they get a first place
Maxie,
vote?
Sarkisia did ask me that, and I'm trying to track down the first place voter there. I reached out to Alabama today, and I'm told that it's a private ballot. Nick Saban doesn't feel comfortable releasing it, so I'm going down my list of suspects and seeing who did give Texas that number one vote. Yeah, I think the buzz has been palpable since Arch Manning committed, because, you know, getting a player of that caliber and that pedigree after a 5-7 season, you know, speaks volumes to, I think, at least the confidence that the family has in Steve Sarkisian. Now, he's still got to prove it. You go 5-7 again, and there may be another Texas coach trying to preach you to stay and come to Austin. So, but it should work out well. Most all of us feel like Quinn Ewers is going to be the presumed candidate. He probably didn't transfer from Ohio State to come down here to sit the bench. And, you know, he plays next year. Arch comes in the following year, maybe redshirts a year. And if Quinn Ewers is as good as they say, maybe he goes to the NFL. If he's not as good as they say, maybe Arch Manning beats him out. So it's all systems go. No breaks, as Sark says, until Saturdays.
In relation to Sark, and you know, there's no getting around, his first year was a bust. Does the commitment of Arch Manning give him a chance to breathe, or does it really still come down to the record at the end of the year?
Yeah, it really doesn't, because, you know, most Texas football coaches since Mack Brown have either won the offseason or done damn well in recruiting. And, you know, now he's got a couple top five recruiting classes back to back. It's getting the type of players Texas is going to need to play and contend in the SEC. And mainly that's the O-line and D-line, where they brought in 15 players in the offseason. So, you know, it's going to come down to Louisiana Monroe September 3rd and thereafter. You got to put some wins on the board when you're losing 4-5 games every year. That's going to what recruits are really going to recognize and relate to.
I realize the next question is, and the answer to it, probably something you've been talking about for 10 years now, but I'll never forget being out in Texas. I think I was at A&M, and the heat was starting to grow on Mack Brown. And you know, what's happened since then is really, it's almost hard to believe. If you had to pinpoint something that, other than constant turmoil, I mean, what happened to Texas, Kirk? I mean, I know this is not a new that isn't a new question for your column.
No, it's not. And I think most people point to the quarterback position. You got to have a quarterback to win and win big in college football. And, you know, Garrett Gilbert followed Colt McCoy after that 2009 championship game loss to Alabama. And then he was a bust. And he ended up going to SMU and still in the NFL, as far as I know, as a backup. But, you know, they just, you know, struck out every time you looked, either in who they got, who they recruited, who they didn't recruit, from Johnny Manziel to RG3 to JT Barrett to Andrew Luck, just go on down the list. And then they failed to develop these players, especially in the offensive line. I don't think they've had an offensive line drafted high since 2002. And the last offensive player they had drafted in the first round was Vince Young. And I don't know if these high school kids remember his name. So it's been a minute. And if you don't have those two staples, you're not going to win many games.
It's just remarkable. And I know you can go back and, you know, Tennessee's been through this. Others have been through this. You know, had we not done this, but
right.
Was Mack Brown, I mean, was it over for him, or could he have just in retrospect, could he have resurrected the program to a point where it at least got back on track?
Well, he was here quite a while after that Alabama loss, and the next year I think kind of doomed him, Paul. You know, they went 5-7 one year after playing for the championship, and then he fired Greg Davis, his offensive coordinator for years and years, Will Muschamp, the head coach in waiting, got tired of waiting real quick and went to Florida. And, you know, who knows if he'd have done any better because he's not a head coach anymore. So I think that kind of set the program kind of wandering through the wilderness, and Mac tried to switch from that spread offense he did with Vince and Colt and run a more pro-style, run-heavy type of system, and it just didn't work for him. But he was given a lot of time after that game before they fired him and forced him out and then have gone through one coach after another.
And, of course, could have been Nick Saban, but too many boosters in Texas didn't want Nick Saban, did they?
Well, and the AD and the president did. You know, I think I may have told you in Atlanta, I think they thought he'd be bigger than the program. And, you know, since he's bigger in college football, they were probably right.
You know, I don't know. When you think about going back in time, and that was an intriguing story in the 13 season, because clearly it's been well documented, and everybody knows that Saban, you know, was in the running. And, you know, Saban's story is he didn't want to deal with all the boosters, but the real story is not enough of the right people wanted him. Isn't that true?
That's right. And, you know, Texas fans are probably what if until the end of time to kind of figure out what the impact would have been if Nick, you know, Nick can win, and I don't care if it's college football or marbles. I mean, he may be the best coach who ever lived, no matter what sport. I would take issue with him if he did vote Texas number one, but otherwise, you know, I'll give Nick high marks on every decision he's pretty much ever made.
Someone tells me that Saban never saw that ballot, but something also tells me, Kirk, that in about 5 weeks, that the story of Nick Saban being wooed by Texas is going to come back up again.
You know, I might get a mention or two, you know. You know, it's funny how respectful he was about Sark in Atlanta. You know, it wasn't quite the love fest that Jimbo and Nick has been, so maybe Sark's hoping he'll take it easy on him a little bit, week two.
Oh, he likes Sark.
He does.
Yeah.
We'll see how much on September 10th.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you look at Saban's history, I have never seen him try to run. I've never seen him to this point try to run the score up. I think on October 8th, that might all change.
It'd be a different game plan, I think, October 8th in Tuscaloosa. You can count on that.
I think you can. Kirk, always good to see you. Thanks so much for coming on.
You too, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Kirk Bowles, one of our absolute favorite guests, 49 years at the same newspaper. That as somebody who spent a lot of time in the newspaper business, that's you don't realize how shocking that is. The most shocking thing is the newspaper is still alive, as Kirk is. We'll take a break. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
So we put out this Twitter question, what CFB game can you watch over and over? And over and over and over. Anyway, we'll share with you some responses as we make our way through the afternoon. Let's get back to the calls, and Uncle Bird is up next. Bird?
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you.
Been a couple of years since I talked to you.
Well, it's good to have you back.
I was getting on there about AC. He said a lot of things in that conversation that didn't really approve with me or probably a lot of your listeners, and just wanted to comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand if a guy, I mean, he said he's moving to Canada. Well, that's not our problem. If you don't like this country, get out.
Right. Absolutely. If you don't like, he actually said he didn't like the country. But he liked the people. You know, a lot of people, you know, go to work every day and protect this country. And,
sure,
you know, I'm not real happy with that. So
yeah, I don't know what to do with him. I'm counting the days before he moves to Canada and hoping that maybe. Maybe he gets detained up there and is forbidden from calling back into this country. But I agree. It's really foolish, but it's on us. We take the call.
Yeah, I know. I want to say on record, I do love I-Man, even though he's an Auburn guy. we enjoy him. We're cutting a lot of logs up here in the Carolinas, and we listen to your radio every day. So,
well, thank you very much. What part
of the
state?
Three o'clock in the afternoon.
Bird, where are you? What part of the state are you working in?
We are central, and we're central North Carolina, east, based out of Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know where that is. Capital.
Yep.
Well, thank you. Be careful. You take care of yourself up there in the logging. Let's continue with more calls. And Steve is in Georgia. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I watch the show every day. I record it and watch it.
Thank you.
If you give me can you give me a few minutes to make a few comments?
Yes, sure.
All right. I want to lay the groundwork. My father, at 17 years old, hitchhiked to Jacksonville to watch the Georgia-Florida game in 1933 and did not miss a game until he passed away in 2000, other than World War II. But I've been going down there since 1959, so that's close to 50 years. But there's no other place like the Georgia-Florida game. It's unique. If anybody's been down there, you can't help but realize it's one of the greatest venues in college football, because half the stadium is Florida and half the stadium is Georgia, and the atmosphere is like no other place. And what bothers me, I think every day you get up and either you're going to serve God or you're going to serve money. And it seems like this country is going towards serving money more than anything else. And what's wrong with tradition? What's wrong with, you know, all the good memories that people have from going down there? I mean, we talk about it all the time about, oh, yeah, you remember the year we went down there and did so-and-so. And, you know, the fans, one of the largest Georgia Bulldog clubs in the country, there might be a bigger one in Atlanta, but the Jacksonville Georgia Bulldog Club is one of the biggest. And there's a tremendous number of fans in South Georgia and North Florida that look at that game as a two-day holiday or vacation. And a lot of people in North Georgia, they look at it as a vacation to go down there. And the ones that can't go or don't want to make the trip, they sell their tickets for $500 a piece. So I just don't understand why we want to do away with tradition and change everything in college football, because, you know, college football was doing pretty good before they made all these changes. And it just bothers me because, I mean, I've got skin in the game. I've been supporting Georgia for a long time, and I don't see Kirby's reasoning about recruiting. I mean, if you can't recruit players in six home games every year, then what good is having one more home game going to do you? And another thing, I think he's doing pretty good on recruiting the way it is now. So I just wondered if you had any comments about that.
Well, Steve, thank you. I respect tradition, and I think it's an important part of college football, but so much has changed and is continuing to change, and I don't think we can get married to what used to be. And because there's a younger generation, and that younger generation includes the people that are playing in the game that probably really just don't care. I mean, I've heard the stories countless times. I've sat on that set in that parking lot in Jacksonville and listening to Tim Tebow tell the story over and over again about his first time. Well, that's great. He's from Jacksonville. He lives there. That's an important thing. And I'm sure it, if you win the game, it's important. If you play in the game. But I just think, I think about that scene a couple of years ago when Notre Dame came to Athens. I think about so many other memories that can be replicated. I'm a traditionalist, but I also believe tradition sometimes has to move on, sometimes for better reasons than maybe what Kirby Smart is purporting here. But he feels strongly about it, and I mean, other than citing tradition and a 2-day holiday that a lot of people can't afford to participate in, I'm really not sure what the big deal is. But I appreciate your call. Thank you very, very much. Turtle is in Birmingham. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul.
Hey,
how's it going?
Great. Thank you.
Paul, I want to start off with apologizing to you. I kind of got mad at you the other day. I think it was Monday, about what you said about my coach. But so I just want to start off with that. But other than that, what's this talk about Notre Dame moving to the SEC? I mean, whatever happened to conferences being based around geographical location? I can't even tell you what state Notre Dame is in, to tell you the truth.
Well, for your information, I only know this because I've been there. It's in Indiana. Now, I can't tell you anything else about Indiana, but I can tell you South Bend is in Indiana. Yeah, what you said is true, but it's also really isn't germane to the issue, because that's something that blew up a long time ago. There's no such thing. This is a country now that this is a sport now that really doesn't depend on geographical location. We found that out with the ACC. The ACC went all the way up and down the East Coast, all the way across to Georgia, to Florida, to Boston, to Pittsburgh, and Syracuse. The West Virginia playing in the Big 12. Arkansas, Missouri, Texas A&M, Oklahoma and Texas and the SEC, the Big Ten. I mean, those things sound good in theory, but they really don't matter a whole lot anymore. And because it's all about television. It's all about how much money you can make. And I know that you hear presidents and commissioners and administrators talk about student athletes and all that, but it's an arms race now. That's all it is. When the Big Ten makes it official that they've got the first $1 billion college deal, that part of it will be confirmed. We're heading to a break. We appreciate you being a part of the show. More of your calls and more guests coming straight ahead.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're back, and Will is in North Carolina. Will, good afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call, Paul. We've spoken a couple of times before, and I wanted to get your opinion on something. With the NIL stuff and money becoming such a major issue with what's going on with everything now, do you think the coaches, the media are gonna coddle and protect the freshmen and sophomores? And I hearken back to the Mike Gundy rant from a few years ago when there's an article in one of the papers up there and he really went to the defense of the kid. Do you think it's gonna get to be more fair game on these kids, or do you think coaches are gonna continue to protect them and use the excuses of, oh, they're young and they made freshman mistakes and things of that nature?
I don't think that will change, from a two-way position. Coaches are always going to protect their players. I once criticized, I would say at the time, the best-known defensive player in the country. And I went too far. But he was really a bad actor. He wouldn't do anything, and I had inside information coming from his head coach that he wouldn't show up at practice. He was late, and I was on a national show, and I called him out. And the athletic director, the coach called me, but he couldn't really say much considering he agreed with me. But then the athletic director called me one day and just started berating me. And I finally said, like, what's the deal? He said, I'm going to protect my guys. There's a mentality in college sports, in all sports, in all walks of life, military, anything where there's a team concept, that those in the most senior positions will protect. It doesn't matter how bad the actor is, okay? Now, I also think the media is complicit in that, and I don't mean that to sound like it's something criminal. It's not. But the media that covers college football is not looking for rocks underneath the surface. They are there to promote the game. So as a result of all of those things, I don't think one thing is going to change, whether the player makes $5 million or he gets a free Chick-fil-A once a week because of a deal that he does on social media.
I tend to agree with you, and also wonder out loud, especially, and it seems like basketball may be more the case than football, with so many kids transferring and, you know, 1 year and one and done and one hit wonders, if the disconnect, the relationships between the coaches and the players is going to be a lot more superficial than,
well, you know, than, well, I than think you're, I think that's the issue. I had someone tell me a conversation this year about a player who was clearly open for business. I mean, this guy was a hot shot, and the going price was very high. And this person told me that there's a coach in particular that said, no, we're not going for it. As much as he would help, I can't have a guy on my team knowing that I paid that type of money for it. And I mean, this is not a straight pay for play deal, although it was pretty close. And again, you can imagine that coach is probably older than a younger coach, because a lot of older coaches just can't deal with it. And I think that's one thing that, you know, we talk about Saban or Brian Kelly or, you know, any of the coaches that are 60 plus, they're struggling more with it than maybe the 30-year-old or the 40-year-old coach who is not as regimented or as structured. So it's a big deal. I don't think it's quite reached the top level yet, but I think it's coming.
I would tend to agree, and I appreciate you taking my call and giving me your insight.
Thank you very much. Really interesting question, too. Gene is up next in Louisiana. Hello, Gene.
Hello, Mr. Paul. Good to see you on the program, man.
Thank you.
I always try to catch it.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. I just have a couple of questions there. I'm wondering why LSU is picked so low in the SEC this year. Would it be because of the newness of the program with Coach Kelly? What would be the particular reasoning there? If you have an answer for that, I sure would love to hear it.
Yeah.
Would it be because of our running back stature? What would it be, Mr. Paul, in your opinion?
Gene, I think it's very simple. When you go off the radar screen as quickly as LSU did, and, you know, not too hard to remember, 3 years ago, they were the absolute epicenter of college football. And then you have a bad year, and then you have a disastrous year. Even though last year there were some surprisingly good things that happened. I think this is only, what we've only seen so far is the coaches poll. The media poll comes out next Monday. And I think there's a chance LSU could show up in that, because I frankly think the media is smarter than the coaches, because the media actually votes. I don't think half the coaches vote. I think they let their PR people do it. It's hard for me to believe that Nick Saban is sitting there and wasting valuable time going, okay, let's see, number 15, who is that going to be? It's not easy filling out it may not be difficult in November, but filling out a ballot right now, it's fairly difficult. That means you have to be following everyone else, and these coaches are not. They know what they have, and they know who their first game is.
Right, right. Well, Mr. Paul, I appreciate that info. I think you have the best program on TV as far as college football.
Thank you very much, Gene. I think right now it's a popular pick to go over on LSU. I think they're going to surprise people. They'll be inconsistent, but let's not forget LSU has one of America's best coaches at the helm. And I think sometimes we just look right past that because of some of the goofiness that occurred, primarily because of the media hating on Brian Kelly because he left Notre Dame. He had the nerve to leave Notre Dame for LSU, even though LSU, quite frankly, is a better football school. We'll take a short break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we are back here on a Wednesday. Let's get back to the calls and check in with Carl, who is in Kentucky. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Paul Feinbaum. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just want to say I've been a loyal Kentucky fan ever since our family used to gather around in Eastern Kentucky and listen to WHLN, Kayward Leopard,
sure,
calling play-by-play. He was the best play-by-play man ever, not just because he
listen,
Kentucky
I agree
games
with you about it, and I had a chance to meet him in college, and nobody was better.
He was super. And we've kind of been, as everyone knows, a basketball school the whole time, and now I'm hoping we're morphing into more dual sport school with Mitch Barnhart and President Capiluto,
sure,
supporting Stoops. But, you know, we've been handicapped through the years with basketball athletic directors like Cliff Hagan and C.M. Newton. They didn't care about football. But now I think we've got an administration that really maybe cares about football, and maybe that's the money too. But, you know, being as that may, I think we've got a shot.
Yeah, I do too. And this is a conversation I had with Mitch Barnhart down in Destin. Mitch Barnhart is among the most respected athletic – I dare say he might be the most respected athletic director in college sports right now. And he understands how important it is. And I think that's one reason they have invested in facilities, as you know, and of course in supporting Mark Stoops. But I will also say this, and I know that we spent days, as you did, and everyone did, talking about the St. Peter's loss and, you know, what happened with Coach Cal. And even Cal talked about it with us a couple of weeks ago. But tonight, when fans in the Bluegrass see the Cats for the first time in the exhibition, and when they finally hit the practice field and start playing the first game, all of that will be forgotten. There's no greater basketball fan base in America than the Kentucky Wildcats. So it's reset, and then the expectations will be right back to where they were. They'll be in the top five in the country, and they'll make another run, and you know, hopefully they'll get there this time.
Well, hopefully, but now you're talking about basketball too.
Well, because I don't think but I know that, but I did that for a reason. I think it irritates me a little bit, not talking to you, but I think Kentucky fans need to understand what you have there with John Calipari. Now, listen, we are as big a fans of Mark Stoops as anybody, and I think the expectations there are ratcheting up as well. And I think what has to happen, though, in football is what has happened in basketball. And I think at some point you have to break through. You have to win that game, like against Georgia in late November, and make that run to Atlanta. And then I think everything will have paid for itself by then. Hey, thank you for the call. How about changing the scope? Sonny is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Sonny. Sonny, are you there? I don't think he is. Caleb in Tennessee is also there. Hello, Caleb.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
I've been waiting for over an hour to talk to you. I'm glad I finally got through.
Well, I am glad you have more patience than me.
Anything to talk to you, Paul. Well,
thank you.
I just wanted to talk to you. I'm a big Tennessee fan, and I just wanted to get your opinion. I know you've been asked this a lot here lately. What do you think what is your prediction on Tennessee going? Do you think they could go 10-2, 9-3, 7-5?
Yeah, I am not in the double digits. I'm going to take a quick look at this schedule right now, and I'm counting. I am going with 9-3.
9-3.
And I think that's with some trepidation, depending on the Pittsburgh game. But yeah, I think
right.
The Vols,
I mean,
I think Tennessee's going to win that game, and then it's just a matter of how, you know, whether they get tripped up. And I, you know, the tough games are obvious. Forget Georgia and Alabama. I mean, those are games that you have a shot at winning. I think you have to win the LSU game, the Florida game. That's not even debatable. That thing has to come to an end. And then it's hope you can finish strong.
Paul, but you go back to the three games last year that they could have won. I mean, the Ole Miss game, the Pitt game, and the bowl game. It just came down to them making plays, and we just couldn't make plays last year. We just didn't have the depth on defense to make the plays that we needed to make. So I think if they can get that straightened out this year, I think that they could probably, like you said, they could probably be second or third in the East, depending on if they beat Kentucky, which I feel like they will.
I mean, there's no, you know, assuming everything goes according to plan, and that's the unknown in college sports, Tennessee's offense should have them in every single game, including Alabama and Georgia. Yeah. It's really going to be a test, according to the people that we talk to up there, is what this defense is all about. And can football comes down to, you know, third down conversions, stops, the usual cliches that you hear every fall. And Tennessee needs good luck. I mean, let's forget the fact that they got robbed out of one win. We know that. That's not even debatable. That's why we joked, and we really weren't joking, that the Purdue game is counting as a win on our show. We don't consider that anything else. And then the mistakes are, but you're always going to get that. And I still don't think they have enough players to compete for a championship, but they have enough offensive weapons to be in every game. So that's a really positive thing.
Paul, I appreciate you taking my call. I enjoy listening and watching your show. I try to every day. I've been watching it and listening to it since 2014 when it came on the SEC Network. I hope one day I can meet you soon and maybe talk some football with you one day.
Caleb, Huntington, Tennessee, isn't that where John Majors is from?
Tim Priest, Mr. Paul.
Oh, Tim Priest.
Tim
okay.
Priest that played at Tennessee.
Okay, I can't remember where. Yeah. I knew somebody
Tim
was from
Priest,
there.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's a very famous player,
Tim
too.
Tim Priest.
Got it. I remember him.
Tim Priest. Yes, sir.
Sure would. My Tennessee geography, not what it used to be. It's what happens when you haven't lived in the state in a lifetime. We're up against the clock. Thanks for the call there, and we are coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.